Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. In May of 2008, a man noticed that a house in Concord, New Hampshire was for sale. So he tried to look inside. And looking through the windows, he saw the body of a woman. Next to her were two journals. One included this entry.
To whomever finds my body, my death is the result of domestic violence and abuse. I talked with and wrote to many people in positions of authority about this, but no one helped me.
The mystery surrounding this woman's death in an empty house is the subject of an award-winning documentary titled God Knows Where I Am. I'm joined now by the film's directors, Jed and Todd Wider from NPR New York. Welcome to both of you.
Hey.
Hi, how are you?
So tell us about this woman, Linda Bishop. You start out by showing us, you know, initially she was this independent, funny woman. She loves the outdoors. She works on a farm. She's a very good mother. And then you start to see some cracks later on in the film. Jed, why don't we start with you? Tell us a little bit about her.
Linda began to manifest signs of mental illness late in her life, in and out of treatment centers, in and out of treatment, eventually finds her way, after being arrested, after throwing a cup of urine into a police officer's face, is sentenced to up to 3 years in a state psychiatric hospital in New Hampshire, where she refuses treatment. And the hospital eventually throws up their arms and says, there's really nothing more we can do for her. We're going to release her. And they make a decision to unconditionally release Linda. She walks out the front door of the hospital in the beginning of fall several years ago and eventually comes to an abandoned farmhouse, an historic farmhouse in New Hampshire, which she breaks into and lives off of apples that she collects from an apple orchard in the backyard of the several hundred acre property and lives off of water that she collects from a brook that runs through the property as well. The interesting part of this story is that two journals, as you said, were found next to Linda. And in those journals, Linda chronicles and captures her feelings, her emotions, her thoughts during that period of time that she was in the house.
Of course, it was a horrendous winter that year. It was one of the worst in the history of Concord, New Hampshire. And we have a clip from the film here where actress Laurie Singer is reading Linda's journal entry. She read all of them through the film, but here's one from December. Let's listen.
My only recourse would be to go to a neighbor. I could go to a neighbor and ask them to call the domestic violence center. But if Satan's workers are in the food pantry and the homeless shelters, I guess they would be in the domestic violence shelters as well.
That was one of Linda Bishop's journal entries. Her last entry was January 18th, and it just said the date Sunday. Her death was ruled starvation due to mental illness. Todd, can you tell us what drew you to this story?
Well, I think at its heart, it's a human story of the nature of the human spirit, of pain and suffering, isolation, depression, mental illness, the feeling of being an outsider in society. It's an incredibly sad story, but it's also extremely beautiful. The diary is littered with these beautiful, poetic passages, references to things that she's seeing in the outside world, but also references to her dreams and her imagination. And she quotes a poem at one point, talks about a Winslow Homer painting at another point. So that was the diary of a very intelligent, literate woman. And I guess it spoke to both of us because, you know, at this point in our society, all of our cities are places where the severely mentally ill and homeless wander around, many of whom are in a delusional state. One of the things the film does bring up is that I think that at times we hide behind the blind protection of civil liberties to simply protect them at the expense of, in this case, life itself. We've shown this film all over the country. Sometimes someone will raise their hand and say, hey, she chose to die in that house. She went there to die. But I would argue that was not a free choice. Her mind was not free. So if your mind is not free, how can you exercise free will? I don't think you can.
This whole idea of civil liberties and mental illness comes up. And Linda's sister, Joan, wanted Linda in the hospital getting treatment. And this is how she described it.
If someone has cancer, they can make an intelligent decision about their care because they can read, they can research, they can talk to their doctor, they can get a second opinion, they can learn about their illness, and they can choose their treatment. And that is perfectly and 100% logical and rational. When the illness involves your ability to think and decide and rationalize, then it is totally counterintuitive to think that that person is going to be able to make a sound decision about their care.
So that's Linda Bishop's sister, Joan, describing her thoughts about being able to determine what kind of care her sister should get for her mental illness. But a lot of folks, and I want to ask you about this, Jed, because we didn't hear from you about this, and of course you're an attorney, a lot of folks feel like making the determination that someone is not capable of determining what kind of care they should get is a big decision to make. Are we equipped as a society to make those types of decisions fairly? And do we have a mental health system that's strong enough to ensure that people's rights are protected and the adequate opinions are being rendered?
I mean, that's really the difficult question, and certainly one of the questions that's posed by the film itself. I think when you look at historically this country and where this country has come from, there's been a very significant transformation from a civil liberty perspective with respect to stripping away the rights or adding rights or providing additional rights to the severely mentally ill. You know, you go back to the time of President Kennedy. As we all know, President Kennedy's sister had been confined against her will. She was one of the original frontal lobotomy cases in the United States, and I think he was horrified by that. One of the first steps he took in coming into office was to actually reform mental health in this country. Unfortunately, he never really got the full funding that he sought. But I think we saw a shift, certainly after Kennedy, from these large psychiatric hospitals where people were institutionalized or confined against their will to a point, I think, today, as you know, you talk to many experts in this space, they strongly believe that, unfortunately, many of the severely mentally ill are actually dying with their rights on, meaning they've been accorded so many civil liberties and so many civil rights that it's very difficult to treat many of them appropriately. And certainly in the case of Linda, look, Linda was confined to a state psychiatric hospital in New Hampshire for up to 3 years. She was her own guardian. She had the right under the law to reject treatment. The reality was that she did very well under treatment. One of the side effects, unfortunately, for her, based upon the treatment that she was taking, was that she felt fatigued. She felt very cloudy, which was fairly common. The hospital, after trying to get her to take treatment, finally had turned to Joan and asked Joan to consider making a motion in court to be named her guardian. I think the decision should be made by mental health professionals.
Should we go back to institutions? And as you mentioned, President Kennedy did get rid of those large mental health institutions that were supposed to be replaced by community-based mental health organizations, and no one ever provided the funding for that. So do we need those institutions back?
I think we certainly need the ability to streamline care for those people who need care. I mean, how can we rely on an individual who may not even recognize, may not even have insight into their own illness and recognize the fact that they need help to make a decision as to whether or not they should have care? So there needs to be a decision-making process that's put into place where if the person does not have insight or is clearly not deemed to be capable of making that decision, the decision is made for them. And then the question becomes, what is that system? What is the best system to accomplish that? And I certainly don't think the decision here to not name Joan as guardian was the right decision. But, you know, at the same time, Linda showed up completely lucid. She sat in front of a judge who had a very significant amount of mental health experience in New Hampshire. But the process didn't work. It did not work here.
it seems almost as if the pendulum is swinging, right? We came from a time in the 60s and 70s when there were films like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and other films like that talking about how these big institutions were trampling on people's rights and sometimes misusing their power over people. Have we come full circle here, and has the pendulum swung back to where we're saying, look, we need more help?
I think the pendulum has shifted significantly. I think it has been, certainly since that time, it's been a 180-degree turn. Look, I mean, at the end of the day, there obviously is a place for privacy. There is a place for someone to be able to have guardianship over themselves. That's critically important. But there needs to be a balance. That balance needs to take into account the civil liberties of an individual and the right to enjoy those civil liberties at the same time. But at the same time, it needs to also take into account the fact that we need to care for people who are not able to care for themselves. And I think the pendulum has shifted to a point today where there have been too many civil liberties accorded to patients.
The other thing I would say is that we live, as you mentioned before, in this sort of post-cuckoo's nest era, you know, where there is the Hollywood imagery of those people being committed against their will and kept forever, locked away in a lunatic asylum, like some Victorian England thing, you know. That is not the world we're in. We are in the world of reimbursement, minimization. And if anything, you're thrown out of these hospitals because the hospital will not get reimbursed for your stay. So the impetus is to discharge. Not to admit, it's to discharge, to get rid of the patients, get the bed clean, get them out.
We haven't talked about stigma at all and how stigma plays into all of this, which, of course, is a big issue, both in terms of making a decision to commit someone and have this, you know, certainly on the record for a very long time. I'd like you to describe how you feel this issue of the stigma about mental illness may, A, prevent people from getting care and may also make the system almost reluctant sometimes to make a definitive diagnosis and a treatment plan until there's really strong, very strong evidence of exactly what the diagnosis is.
The stigma around mental illness, seeking treatment, seeking help, prevents a lot of people from getting help until they get much worse and they manifest their illness in a severe way, and then it's a disaster. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to make the film. The way we present Linda Bishop, as you said before in the beginning and in the middle, is this loving, caring, funny, charming, outgoing, gregarious mother, sister, friend, who could be like anyone. I mean, Linda Bishop went to college, studied art, and the way we present her is in a way to essentially resonate empathy for a person that could be like any person. And the truth is, any homeless person that you encounter could be like any of us. There's no difference, really. They're all human beings, right? But they're on the streets due to broken neurochemistry or bad circumstance. But they're marginalized by their position and their situation. And as a result of that, they don't have a lobby, they're vulnerable, and they're not cared for.
Todd and Jed Wider are documentary filmmakers. Their latest film is titled God Knows Where I Am. They spoke with me from NPR New York. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you very much.
And stay with us. Coming up, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh joins us to talk about several things, such as the city's efforts to help Houston, why he's already negotiating with city teachers again, even though a tentative contract deal with the teachers' union was agreed to earlier this month, and Mayor Walsh says Boston police have made progress addressing racial disparities in police investigations. Stay tuned. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.